It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, as always, Ed Jordanic, also from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. Ed, I'm going to start with you. I think by far, that was probably the best Notre Dame football Saturday in the last 3 years. And it wasn't so much what happened inside the stadium, because there was a lot of good there, but I think just also what happened elsewhere outside of the stadium, and I mean specifically college football. I think we learned that Georgia's not that bad of a football team. They're obviously pretty good. Boston College doesn't stink that bad. I mean, they obviously held Clemson for three quarters. And, you know, overall, it was a pretty doggone good day for the Irish, especially, you know, as we start digging into what happened on Saturday night at Michigan State. But overall, you got to admit, I mean, it was a pretty doggone good day for Notre Dame football fans.
Yeah, no, I think it was. I mean, it starts with the fact that we are all sort of hoping that this was a different team, that this program had changed and changed for the better. And I think we got a little bit more evidence, maybe a lot more evidence, to confirm that thought. You know, there's just some things about playing good football that we haven't seen for a while that are starting to look more like the character of this team as opposed to maybe some one-offs. And that's really encouraging. I mean, you know, you talk about the way that they started the game. I mean, I always look to see, does the team look prepared to play? Do they look ready to play? Do they look locked in right from the get-go? It's a team that took the opening kickoff down and scored a touchdown. You know, is it a team that looks on defense like they're prepared to play? You know, obviously, they had a good first quarter on defense. In other words, so many teams that we've seen in the past have, you know, they've had the ball taken right down them. You know, it seems like it takes them a quarter and a half to settle in. You know, this team doesn't look like that. Is it a team that shows improvement in certain weak areas, you know, from week to week? Obviously, Brandon Wimbush in the passing game got a lot of attention after last week. Obviously, there was improvement made. So the evidence is starting to accumulate that this is a different team and a program that's taken steps in the right direction. All the stuff that we've heard about and read about and you know, genuinely hoped about, maybe real and maybe genuine. So, you know, we talked about how they needed to basically win out to, going into Southern Cal, and that seems to be more of a probability now than a possibility. And then hopefully they'll have another chance to take another step forward, which is winning a big game against a ranked opponent, which they still haven't done.
Yeah,
so,
yep.
So overall, pretty encouraging.
No, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, a lot of good things. Coffee, you could look at the stats and say, well, wait a minute, what happened here? I mean, we gave up 496 yards. We gained 355. But from a defensive standpoint, we were pretty opportunistic, something that we haven't been in a long time. I mean, those three turnovers, I'd argue, were three takeaways. They weren't like cough-ups. They were literally turnovers that were forced by the Irish defense, especially – probably the most game-changing moment was that fumble at the goal line, which was correctly called. I mean, we've been burned on some, you know, video replays, and we can get into that all night long about, you know, how somehow Notre Dame gets screwed on that stuff like that. But that was one that went in our favor and kind of changed the game. Well, I mean, let's just talk about the headhunting. How do you not call that targeting?
Well, it's
not hard to look at that and say that that is targeting.
Yeah,
that
certainly was disappointing, and especially when you look at the examples from last year where Notre Dame seemed to be victimized by targeting calls that would be called against their players and yet not before than when the situation would merit. I think I'm very happy. Now I'm pretty happy with the way the defense has been playing. For the most part, I agree about the takeaways. I think Werke's fumble might have been a little bit of a mental error. He brought that ball up way higher than it should have been, and he was able to pop it out. But the jump of the route for the pick six that Love met was textbook cornerback play. I mean, he read the quarterback the whole way, jumped the route, scored six. That's what you want to see out of your defensive backfield. I think of the four games we've seen, the one consistency we're seeing is that the defense is playing significantly better than they did last year, which certainly is a big, big plus. We have cornerbacks who are looking for the ball. We have linebackers that are going after the ball carrier, not worrying about where they're supposed to be standing or what they're supposed to be covering. I think so far, the hire of Elko and Lay, who's coaching the linebackers, I think both of those are showing to be tremendous positives on that on the defensive side of the ledger. And I think as they build through this first half of the season, which is a certainly lesser in intensity than the second half's going to be, this is their chance to truly get their feet under them and say, okay, we've improved over last year, but now every game we're going to get better, and we're going to get better, so that when these second half challenges come in, we're truly ready for them, and we can bring that same level of intensity, that same level of improvement to the tough games in the second half as we are to the maybe middling games in the first.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think more than anything, that's probably what's shown some of the, you know, if you talk to ND fans, what are they excited about? Well, we're excited because, number one, that was a difficult place to go. You go to Michigan State, 8 o'clock, under the lights. We've been there, done that before. And like Ed said, I mean, we took the opening kickoff and went right down their throat. And they had 2 weeks to prepare for us. So they had a bye week. I was thinking for sure that, okay, there's going to be, you know, D'Antonio is a pretty good coach. He'll probably coach these guys to a point where they take advantage of some situations that, you know, 2 weeks gives you. And we didn't. And you know, I don't want to harp on this, Ed, but I do think it's weird. And I'm curious, when's the last time you, watching a college football game, saw a review of a review? I don't think I've ever seen that in my life.
Much.
And yeah, and I mean, you know, granted, even the reviews that they did, you watch them in real time and you're like, okay, Equanimeous St. Brown is out of bounds. It's not even close. What are you reviewing this for? Or some of the other, I mean, a couple of them were so obvious. What did they even play for?
Yeah, I mean, officials in all sports, you know, it's, you know, replay is a blessing and a curse. I mean, I think it's reduced the quality of the product on the field in terms of the live officiating. You know, more calls are probably right in the end, but to the detriment of the flow of the game and probably to the quality of the officiating on the field. But you know, getting back to the targeting and all that kind of stuff and the takeaways, and you know, I've always thought that, you know, the better you play, the luckier you get. And this team is playing better than last year, and maybe they're getting a few more breaks than last year. You know, like Lou Holtz always said, you know, to have a championship caliber team, or to, you know, to run the table or have a one loss season, you've got to obviously you've got to play well and be prepared, but you've also got a little bit of luck along the way. And and this team looks like it's going to make a little bit more breaks for itself than teams in the past, and that's important too. You know, the other thing is that you kind of get the feeling, and we'll hear a fair amount of this next week. It was, you know, you could almost hear fans cringing in the last quarter of the game as Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt, you know, began heaping praise upon Brian Kelly. you know, I thought it was, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, you're a hero when you win, and you're a dog when you lose. I mean, it's just the way that it works. And, you'll have a lot more of these, you know, Brian Kelly is a good football coach stories, as long as Notre Dame continues to win. And you'll have a lot more hot seat stories, you know, if they lose. That's just kind of the way that works. But it's pretty clear that, you know, that this was not this was a pretty reflective guy after last year that really changed not just assistant coaches but his own style of going about his business in terms of how he decided to be to lead you know a group of 85 guys. It's you know, I don't think that, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens here, but you're tested, you know, in adversity. We'll see the next time that a gasket is blown, sort of, you know, how that comes across. But it doesn't appear phony to me. I mean, it appears that whatever conversations were had with players, with these leadership groups, maybe with Swarbrick or whatever, that that, you know, just like any manager of a business operation or principal of a school or, you know, leader of a squadron or whatever, this is a guy in a leadership position who got a message pretty loud and clear that some things needed to change, starting at the top and starting with him. And it appears that they genuinely have. And it certainly, I don't think that the players would sort of be performing the way that they are if that wasn't a genuine change, because it does seem to be reflected in the way that they're approaching things so far. So, you know, you have to take care of business against the overmatched Miami of Ohio team. You have to go on the road against a talented North Carolina team that I believe lost to Duke, right? Isn't Duke 4-0? Yeah. So, but there's no reason that and, you know, his record actually, as opposed to D'Antonio's, is pretty damn good after bye weeks. You know, I think there's quite a bit to look forward to. Obviously, NC State is a bear. Miami's good. Stanford's going to be, you know, I mean, they will be good. So it's a long, long season. You know, you've got a young team that's buying in. I think as a head coach, that's a hell of a lot of fun. And I think if a head coach is having fun and a coaching staff is having fun, that creates a pretty good culture that leads to, you know, pretty loose and solid and, you know, and pretty good performances on Saturdays.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I did see it too. I don't know if you guys happened to catch this, but they showed a sideline shot of Brian Kelly right before the game. I couldn't see who he was looking at. I thought it was Wimbush, but I wasn't 100% sure. But, you know, he had a nice smile on his face and kind of joked around almost laughingly at what I thought was Wimbush. But, I mean, I think that was a perfect indication of, okay, Brian Kelly is a little bit different than what he's been in the past. And it was just something small, but it was noticeable, something that I saw. Now, I don't know if you guys also happen to catch College Game Day, but Lee Corso basically stated that Notre Dame will probably go 7-5, but Kelly will keep his job, which is in direct conflict to what we've been saying. And I don't know what planet he lives on, but 7-5 isn't going to cut it.
Not
I don't
so
care
fast,
what you
my
say.
Friend.
I mean, if he does survive 7-5, then oh man, we got bigger problems than we thought.
The main issue there is, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, sitting where they are now at 3-1, to get to 7-5, I mean, think of the teams they would have to lose to in order to get there. I mean, that it's one thing to throw a record out there and then opine as to whether or not Brian Kelly would keep his job, but you kind of have to take that in the current context. If he said that at the beginning of the season, okay, well, maybe. But you're saying that right now, which says that that Notre Dame would then lose four of their remaining games. And I don't see how that could happen and you could keep him. Because where they are right now at 3-1, I mean, they've certainly performed better. They're playing well, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That would take an epic collapse to get to 7-5. And I don't know, after 4-8 last year, if logistically Notre Dame can make that work. And that's not to say they're going to finish 7-5. At this point, I don't think that's going to happen. But I really don't think. I mean, I don't know. Lee's had one too many strokes, unfortunately, and I don't know why they keep parading him out, the poor guy. But yeah, I logistically that doesn't make sense to me at all.
Nothing can happen. I mean, it's a long season, right? You know, this team is.
It is.
This team. You know, listen. There's a Brandon Wimbush injury away from putting. You know, there's a Quentin Nelson injury away from thing. You know, there's a Jerry Tillery.
Really quick, I want you to comment on something, because I think this is a clear indicator of that particular type of thinking. How do you explain Florida State at 0-2 being ranked ahead of us?
I don't spend a lot of time worried about it. I mean, rankings take care of themselves.
But
still, though, I mean, the reality of the matter, though, is how do you explain that?
I mean, do you think coaches spend more than 20 seconds putting together their ballot and sending it in? I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, 0-2 Florida State, how do you do that?
Gophers and other, like, whatever a key grip is at the coaching level, but they hand that off to like interns in the athletic office, and really with the advent of the playoffs and stuff like that, both polls have become basically.
Listen, I don't care if you're Notre Dame or Alabama or Ohio State or Michigan, but when you go 4-8, scratching your way back into, you know, the top 5, 10, 15, 20, and, you know, Notre Dame has lost a game.
But to Georgia, who spanked Michigan, Mississippi State got spanked.
I know. But Notre Dame look particularly good, you know, losing to Georgia? Not particularly. So, you know, I mean,
they didn't get beat 31-3.
That's something that coaches and players, you know, maybe they use it as a little bit of a motivation. I don't know. But the thing is that, you know, when you look at how back in the pack, you know, Notre Dame started in 2012 when they ended up number one in the country after 12 games. You know, I don't think it's something to worry about. If you win, that kind of stuff really tends to take care of itself. And I think Notre Dame's schedule is challenging enough that, you know, listen, we'll where we're ranked is going to be a hell of a good problem to have because after last year, you know, it's and you're right. I mean, I like seeing NC State win. I was ticked off when Stanford beat San Diego State. I like seeing USC. You know, I want them to be undefeated when we play them. You know, all that stuff is important. So let's just
let me ask you guys a question, because something that occurred to me while I was watching the game did you guys find the Fox broadcast team as excruciating as I did? I never thought I would yearn for the erudite sharings of Doug Flutie, but holy moly, those guys in the booth and their crack diagnostic team or whatever in New York or wherever they keep them, geez, they were all terrible. They were just terrible.
You know, I mean, Fox is – they struggle. I mean –
Fox doesn't do college
sports.
Yeah,
they really
well,
don't. I mean, you know, between Robert Smith and Brian Wimbush, you know, they didn't identify Michael Young returning the opening kickoff. They said it was C.J. Sanders after, you know, it was clearly 87 who caught the ball and ran it back. I mean, they just, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think that, you know, in general, you know, these guys don't do a lot of homework, and they just sort of. Again, we have a single team that they follow. They have to follow a bunch of them. But like I've said to you guys 100 times, if the three of us had 4 or 5 days to prepare for a game between, you know, Appalachian State and Toledo, we'd know the roster, we'd know the numbers, we'd have watched the film, we'd know we would do a better job. I don't know if we would be able to articulate it and know all the cues and, you know, be able to pull off a broadcast. Or be as polished, but we'd know our shit, and we wouldn't, like, you know, come off looking, you know, dopey like these guys do so often.
Gus Johnson, baby. Oh man, this.
No, I like Gus Johnson. Yikes. I think he brings a lot to the table. Oh. I mean, he doesn't bother me, but you know, and at least I can't remember him screwing anything up in particular in terms of misidentifying people or saying stuff. At least he didn't he didn't call Drew Tranquil a walk-on. But a former walk-on.
It's given me a whole new appreciation for them bringing Mike Tirico on board.
Yeah, he's a pro.
Been,
he's a pro.
I think fantastic he's a pro. So far. In the opening two games, he has been probably the best Notre Dame has had. Almost, I dare say, back to the beginning of the NBC contract. I think bringing someone like Tirico in is a level of professionalism we haven't seen in a while, and I think that's going to be a benefit to ND fans, and it really stood in sharp contrast to what we saw on Saturday, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like pairing, you know, Jordan Spieth with a 10 handicapper, you know, because Flutie is just, you know, he belongs on, you know, the fifth string. Yeah, he's a fifth string guy, and Tirico's a pro and has done every single big thing that pretty much there is to do in sports. And you know, there's got to be somebody out there. You know, Mayock can be a little pedantic and or whatever the word is. He could be a little ridiculous, but I think he was, you know, for the thinking person's you know, consumer of a college football broadcast, he was
exactly
way ahead of most of these guys that you watch today. So
yeah, you know, overall, I mean, I think I just, you know, in closing, I would say that you got to be really excited with what we saw Saturday. Just in light of what we were up against and what we needed. And, you know, like you said, Ed, I think all eyes were on, okay, what kind of culture do we have that exists at Notre Dame right at the moment? And there's some really positive signs. I mean, there were some reports that Brian Kelly spent some time celebrating with the players in the locker room, which he should do.
Oh, yeah, there's some video of it. Yeah, there's some good video of it.
Great, that's just great stuff because that goes a long way with the players, with the culture, with, hey, guys, we believe in each other. And, you know, and
were there any injuries that came out of Saturday's game?
I didn't see any anything that – I mean, I
imagine we'd probably hear about it tomorrow when they have the usual press conference for Miami of Ohio.
Right. I didn't.
You know, one thing real quick is like, you know, just to comment on the defense a little bit and the X's and O's. I mean, there are a couple plays where, you know, I mean, it's like Julian Okwara is, you know, blowing past, you know, a guy, and you know, they put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, a lot more. You know, they only got a couple of sacks, I think, but they had some pretty consistent pressure. But you know, then a play later, you'd see him following the tight end down the field in man-to-man coverage and just blanketing him. I mean, that kid is one to keep an eye on. I mean, he's still pretty much of a string bean, but he is athletic as hell.
Yeah,
I mean,
no doubt.
they've got some guys. You know, they also, you know, at the end of the game, they had Micah Drew Treadway and Tiasosum and some of those, you know, kind of defensive tackles that, you know, they look pretty fresh on defense at the end of the first unit and a half or whatever. I thought played pretty well in the fourth quarter to just kind of erase any doubt that this was going to be a game. And that I think goes back to some of that, you know, strength and conditioning stuff. So I think we're kind of also learning that, you know, the checks that were written with a lot of the statements being made over the summer, they're being cashed now. You know, the strength and conditioning upgrade and improvement is real. You can kind of see it in the way that they're playing. So it's kind of nice to see the performance and the effort and the culture and all those things that that are improved match the rhetoric that we heard, because there's been some few years in the past that was definitely not the case.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Well, I mean, I think Elko has turned out to be what we were hoping he'd be. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. You can't give him any more praise than what he's deserved. The defense has shown up. And when was the last time we had a game where there were, you know, three legitimate takeaways? I mean,
yeah.
I can't
give
Long
remember.
And, yeah, I thought Long, he called
Brian
a great
Kelly
game.
Credit.
Yeah, he did. He called a great game.
I was like, you know what? If this is real, the stuff that they were saying this week, then – the first five or six plays are going to be throws because they're going to get, and they were. Yep.
Yeah, he called a great game. I thought he called a great game. It was overall just, you know, a lot of fun to see something like that, and giving us a lot of hope for, all right, what's yet to be. There's a lot of games left, so we'll find out. But at least, as we all were hoping for, it looks like there's a shot at going into USC with one loss, probably somewhere around 15, 16, 17 being ranked. And that game could be something kind of special. Somehow we pull it out. So who knows? All right, we're going to leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.